Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dreamland, America's Immigration Lottery in an Age of Restriction, by Carly Goodman, narrated by Janet Metzger. Introduction. On eBay, I bought an envelope for $3.99. It had been mailed on October 13, 1995, from Tomale in northern Ghana to an office suite in Los Angeles. It was likely for sale because of the affixed stamps, four of them, each worth 100 sedis. The featured image on the stamps is Cape Coast Castle, a former European outpost on the coast of the Gulf of Guinea, through which hundreds of thousands of African people were moved before being shuffled onto ships bound for the Americas. The envelope is addressed to a rather official name, New U.S. Government Lottery, a reference to the United States Diversity Visa or Green Card Lottery. Through this program, the United States makes immigrant visas available to people around the world who would like to make lives in America. A person in Ghana mailed this envelope, presumably to enter the lottery, spinning fortune's merry wheel and hoping for good luck and a green card. The Green Card Lottery has come to play a powerful role as one of very few channels for African immigration to the United States in a new era of immigration restriction. The Cape Coast Castle stamps on the envelope are a visual reminder that places like Ghana and the United States have long been linked together through a history made by trade, exchange, and migration, most prominently the forced migration of enslaved people. The fading images of the castle remind us of the roots of today's global inequality, of processes that shape the directions of migrations even now. A symbol of conquest, theft, and oppression, made into a national attraction and stamp, was casually affixed to a dispatch that would trace a new route across the Atlantic. The thin paper of the envelope is an artifact of the tremendous flurry of global lottery-related activity that began in the summer of 1994. Unlike most other immigration policies, the lottery offered a chance of immigration to people without ties to the United States. These immigrants would not be selected because of family connections, particularly valued skills, or special humanitarian need. Rather, the lottery was run to enable people from underrepresented countries to gain the opportunity to migrate legally, a prospect otherwise all but denied them. The early advocates for this kind of program hoped it would benefit Europeans, whose experiences of immigration restriction showed white policymakers how harmful such restrictions could be. Offering immigrant visas by lottery would then allow for a flow of white immigrants to the United States in an age of largely Asian and Latin American immigration. The Diversity Visa Lottery did that. But it also opened doors, long blocked, to black immigrants from Africa. When the lottery was introduced to African countries, it arrived in a context of austerity, with many other emigration possibilities hindered, and it therefore fueled a cottage industry of migration-related services and a festive annual tradition. Banners, posters, flyers, and signs announced the lottery's annual start, and with it, a signal of American openness and welcome. The lottery painted America as a dreamland. It was a gesture that people understood as targeting African people specifically. It went against the restrictionist grain, allowing Africans a rare alternative to a long-standing sense of global marginalization. In the 1995 lottery, 6.5 million entries from around the world vied for just 55,000 available visas. After having their names drawn as winners, lottery registrants could then apply for an immigrant visa. running an immigration admissions program as a lottery traded ordinary bureaucratic sobriety for a sense of whimsy. Rather than a set of criteria written by powerful gatekeepers, the lottery placed luck front and center, as if to acknowledge the randomness that shapes our lives, where we are born, what rights we are afforded, whether we have the power to come and go as we please. These depend on happenstance and contingency, rather than something earned. Why pretend otherwise? More than 20,000 diversity visas would be issued to people from Africa that first year, including more than 2,000 to Ghanaians. The envelope I found on eBay wasn't sent to a government agency, even if the address line suggested otherwise. I recognized the recipient's address as the private offices of an American attorney at a suite on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles. I had seen the address printed with photos of the lawyer David L. Amkraut's face on advertisements in Ghanaian newspapers from the 1990s. Amkraut, I learned after Googling him, was sanctioned by the Federal Trade Commission in 1997 for deceptive practices around the green card lottery. Amkraut, I learned after Googling him, was sanctioned by the Federal Trade Commission in 1997 for deceptive practices around the green card lottery. He was accused of inflating his success record, sending multiple entries for his clients, which disqualified them, and then withholding from clients their identifying case numbers to coerce them to retain his legal services for the next step of the process. Intermediaries like Amkraut, along with an array of local actors in Africa, sought to make a profit, or a living, in an era that tended to elevate entrepreneurial daring. Such practices reflected the rising value of migration services in this era of globalization, especially those that tapped into and alleviated people's anxieties about approaching increasingly fortified U.S. borders. Amkraut denied the charges, but agreed to certain steps of redress, including offering free lottery services to past clients for the next upcoming lottery. We don't know if the envelope sender got lucky and won, or if they availed themselves of the opportunity to work with Amkraut again for free. Maybe they received a visa, flew to the United States, landed a job, and found an apartment, went back to school, met a spouse, started a family, wrote themselves into the American story. Over more than a quarter century of the lottery's operation, 500,000 people from Africa have received diversity visas to the United States. Altogether, 1.2 million people have been issued these visas, adding to the diversity of American society and bringing their talents and aspirations to these shores. In the 2020s, this object is a relic. This paper envelope contains a story of duplicity and profit-seeking. It is adorned with a historical symbol of the slavery, plunder, and anti-blackness that patterned the modern world. And it nevertheless testifies to the sender's hope for the promise of the American dream. Today, the lottery is conducted online. Indeed, its history is intertwined with the Internet's history, and the Internet has shaped its spread throughout African countries. And the lottery has continued to bring people in, even as the United States has moved away from the immigration generosity that the lottery signaled to embrace more punitive and harsh policies of restriction. This shift in our politics of immigration has come even as the lottery has been an enormous boon to the United States. It has been extremely popular globally, even when the United States and Americans have not rated particularly highly in public opinion. Despite its legislative origins in racist logics about the value of white immigration to American society, the lottery has both targeted broader diversity and delivered it. it has been a surprisingly successful program of major significance that points toward what good, inclusive migration policy might look like. The lottery's story helps us recognize that immigration includes but is not limited to what happens at the U.S.-Mexico border. And when we think about immigration, it isn't enough to identify anti-immigration policies as cruel and harmful, though they are. Instead, here is a positive example of immigration's potential gifts. The United States and Americans stand to benefit if we embrace broad, forward-looking policies that create conditions of welcome and that challenge white supremacy. This is even more clear to me now than when I first learned about the lottery in 2011. I was traveling in West Africa and observed that a U.S. policy with almost no public profile in the United States was the subject of tremendous energy in countries like Ghana and Togo. The same was true in Ethiopia, Sudan, Kenya, and elsewhere. Its appeal was buoyed by shifts in people's attitudes toward migration in a context of economic reconfiguration, austerity policies, and persistent marginalization. Subsequent research trips to Africa, to Ghana and Cameroon, affirmed the power of this program to shape people's ideas and expectations about migration to the United States. But I also soon learned in archives in the United States how the lottery's legislative roots reflected serious limits on the dazzling picture of American generosity conjured in cyber cafes across Africa. The debate that produced the program was largely unconcerned with creating a path to citizenship for African people. Instead, the lottery's origins were framed as a form of restitution to be made to the Irish, especially Irish immigrants living without legal status in the United States. Advocates and sympathizers touted the contributions made by Irish immigrants throughout U.S. history and decried recent policy changes that had removed their former advantage in a system that once explicitly privileged whiteness. Empathy infused the debate as policymakers imagined their own forebears, who might also have been shut out had they come in the late 20th century. Such exclusions would have denied the United States key stories about its unique place in the world. Celebrations of immigration as a historical driver of American progress, especially when imagined as primarily white, framed the visa lottery's genesis. Because of the necessity of crafting policy that appeared fair and non-racist, proponents of a program that would enable more white immigration couched it as serving America's diversity, borrowing a term then much in vogue. It worked, and the visa lottery became part of the law. It happened because policymakers at the time recognized not only that restrictions caused harm, but also that adding people to America was a good thing. With new people came new workers, caregivers, thinkers, energy, and dreams. They didn't see the prospect of migration to the United States as a crisis. As the Cold War waned, America's future seemed abundant. Many imagined that a future with more immigrants would be even brighter. As a result, the program widened the doors just a bit more than its strongest advocates expected. It wasn't that its legislators were anti-racists, far from it. But they didn't doubt that American democracy would be strengthened by the presence of immigrants, and that included people of color. That sliver ultimately created genuine access and opportunities for people whose aspirations to emigrate were all but invisible at the time in Washington. As African people used the lottery to come to the United States, to bring their talents and their family members, to gain skills and experiences here, the program has revealed itself to be a beneficial one. Newcomers often arrive with strongly held beliefs about America's opportunities and promise. Immigration drives American economic growth, revives neighborhoods, allows for new families and communities to thrive, for people to encounter each other, to grow, and to learn. Extending opportunities for migration allows people from outside the United States to use their skills to earn more money than they could at home. Some have argued that these benefits redound not only to local U.S. communities and workplaces, but to families and others back home when immigrants send remittances and share the skills and experiences they have gained. In the United States, growing African immigration has helped to fulfill the stated goal of the lottery program by fostering greater diversity. But it has done more. A rapidly increasing proportion of Black Americans is foreign-born. The presence of Black immigrants may help foster new conversations about global Black history and solidarities across borders. Already, Black immigrant advocacy groups have focused attention on the fact and rallying cry that immigration is a Black issue, and they have added their voices to movements fighting structural racism within and beyond the immigration system. Black immigrants and their experiences in the United States may help shape how the country reckons with anti-Blackness and immigration restriction together. Recognizing the connections and intersections between struggles for immigrant rights and Black lives may yield a richer vision of freedom for all. The lottery represents a relatively small portion of our large and complex immigration admissions system, but it has been vulnerable to criticism nevertheless. That it has remained intact is as unexpected as the circumstances of its creation and an outcome of congressional inaction and deadlock. Detractors have charged that it makes no sense given the rationale of the immigration system, that it poses a security risk, that its goal of diversity undermines unity, and that the United States cannot afford to be generous in its immigration policies. It is remarkable that it has persisted, especially given dramatic changes to the immigration system since the 1990s, including the rise of militarized immigration enforcement, detention, deportations, and violence targeting undocumented immigrants and immigrants of color. Strengthened institutional anti-immigration and an increasingly vocal restrictionist movement are just two components of a resurgent nativist force that plays a growing role in American politics, constituting a formidable backlash to the pluralist politics that created the lottery. The conditions of austerity and economic reconfiguration that made dreams of leaving Africa more potent for those who play the green card lottery were not unique to Africa, of course. In the United States, the gutting of the social safety net, rising inequality, and an atmosphere of insecurity provided context for spikes of anti-immigration politics since the 1990s, helping create this new era of immigration restriction. Our uneven and combined world has become connected after all, and truly understanding restriction here and hope there demands we look more closely at the lottery. Welcoming immigrants based on luck alone has an absurd quality that reflects deeper truths about the prominent place of luck and chance in our world. Indeed, a system based around luck is uncomfortably apt for a world that has increasingly given up on collective capacities for change. Access to a dignified life seems to depend on individuals' good fortune to be born in the right time and place, or to win a chance at a green card with vanishingly long odds. Luck defines winners and losers. In place of choices about how to live good lives and build futures for our children, we have chance. In place of the very idea of the public good, we have hardening borders. It is impossible to ignore how immigrant exclusion and restriction, and how even facially neutral and inclusive policies for immigrant admissions, are driven by a conception of America as a primarily white country. This concept is deeply rooted in American history, but the presidency of Donald Trump recently brought much to the surface. His birtherism, attacks on legal immigration, vitriol toward the diversity visa lottery, and derisive comments about immigrants from majority black countries exposed deep truths about immigration gatekeeping as profoundly anti-black. In the entire history of the lottery's operation, it was only during the Trump administration and the coronavirus pandemic that the program was ever seriously scaled back, an effort that the lottery's defenders have identified as part of the politics of white grievance. The president's advisor, Stephen Miller, defending a legislative effort to curtail legal immigration from Africa and elsewhere, sneered in a television interview that the Statue of Liberty wasn't really a beacon of hope for immigrants. Instead, he argued, echoing talking points from the far right, "The Statue of Liberty is a symbol of American liberty lighting the world. The poem that you're referring to was added later and is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty." It is true that the poem was not an original part of the statue. During the 1880s, Emma Lazarus wrote the poem The New Colossus with its famous lines, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." She was inspired by the stories of Jewish refugees being held on Ward's Island in New York. The poem was only inscribed on a plaque and added to the base in 1903, 17 years after the statue's dedication. The subsequent symbolism of the Mother of Exiles that became so widely accepted in the mid-20th century promoted a very narrow conception of the nation of immigrants, one that privileged the experiences of European migrants and their descendants. The story had its limits. But Miller and Trump weren't all that interested in the statue's other meanings either, including Edward de Laboulaye's intention to use the gift to commemorate the emancipation of 4 million enslaved people in America after the Civil War. An early model showed the statue illuminating the world with her torch as we recognize today. In her other hand, the statue held broken shackles, marking the end of slavery. In the final version, chains still lay by her feet. But by the time of her dedication in 1886, Reconstruction was over, and African Americans who had fought for freedom were moved back again toward slavery, as W.E.B. Du Bois described when Jim Crow descended. The idea that the United States could be enlightening the world with its version of liberty was clearly incongruous. Later, when she became a symbol for the U.S. admission of refugees and for celebrating the legacies of European immigration, black Americans had to wonder again why America's promises to them went unfulfilled. There is power in these two stories we tell about the statue, that she stands for ours as a nation of immigrants, and that she stands as a symbol of liberty and the end of slavery. But both stories are incomplete. There is no symbol more associated with the visa lottery than the iconic statue. She adorned the materials of the Irish advocates who sought the program. She hovered over the immigration hearings of the late 1980s, receiving a massive makeover and party for her 100th birthday in 1986. She was emblazoned on the posters and banners outside uncountable internet cafes and travel agencies across Africa advertising the annual lottery. And she became a key site for a protest by Patricia Okumu, an African immigrant, against Trump administration immigration policies. In light of America's unresolved histories, The statue is an ambivalent symbol. But perhaps in the visa lottery, we can see that ambivalence reconciled. For the statue to stand for welcoming and embracing migrants, it must also embody the liberation of Black Americans. What has become clearer over time is that those who seek to eliminate the diversity visa lottery do so because it represents a threat to white power in America. As a result, the lottery's champions not only have recognized the pragmatic benefits of the program and how it serves U.S. interests, but have seen it as a bulwark against the collapse of multiracial, pluralistic democracy. The elimination of the lottery can be understood as part of the backlash against advancements and freedoms of African Americans in recent decades. This context makes the lottery more than a quirky holdover from the 1990s. Indeed, it makes an urgent case that the United States must commit to a future of immigration generosity that ensures ongoing immigration from African countries that have long been blocked and have been made less stable and less livable over the past decades by U.S. economic and foreign policies. As migration scholar Harsha Walia says, it's those same fault lines of plunder around the world that are the fault lines of migration. A more just world would allow more people to stay home and thrive. But if such massive and deepening disparities continue to exist across borders, then a more just and equitable world is one with more migration opportunities, fewer obstacles and restrictions, robust protections of people's dignity, and less rigid gatekeeping. This is even more pressing as it becomes clear that existing methods of categorizing migration, labor, family, refugee, climate, fail to recognize people's lived experiences, and borders further limit mobility. Why not a lottery? Enabling a future with Black migration through the lottery and other channels allows us to see the lottery as a form of repair. Our fates are linked together, and our future depends on the strengths of the communities we build together. Part 1. 1. Undocumented and Irish. The first time Sean Benson landed in New York, he came as a student from Ireland on an exchange trip to see the country that loomed so large in the Irish imagination. The second time, he took a gamble. It was the same flight, just a few years later, EI number 105 from Dublin to JFK. But this time was different. After finishing his degree in management at Trinity College, he had struck out in the job market in Ireland. Many others suffered the same fate. Benson was part of a post-war Irish baby boom reaching adulthood, only to find that good jobs and opportunities weren't keeping pace with their numbers. Leaving home wasn't easy. In fact, the idea that he would ever have to leave his home and his family had been the furthest thing from his mind. His parents never thought they'd have to say goodbye to their children. But by 1985, with degree in hand and no job, he felt he had no choice, not if he was going to live the kind of life he'd dreamed of and planned for. There were simply no options for him in Ireland. Reluctantly, he entered a kind of exile. Even so, he was ambitious, ready to begin his life as an adult, to earn a living, and to put his education and skills to use. Benson had worked briefly on Wall Street when he was first in New York on a J-1 exchange visa, so he was ready to pick up where he'd left off. Wall Street in the 1980s was dazzling, the stuff of Hollywood glamour in films like Wall Street, 1987, and Working Girl, 1988. New York, City of Possibilities, was where he would start his life. He talked his way into a tourist visa at the U.S. Consulate in Dublin, packed his bags, and soon found himself sharing a city with the Statue of Liberty and millions of dreamers and strivers. There was nobody to greet him at the airport when he arrived, but a friend had a place in Woodside, Queens, where he could crash. He and about 10 other guys, all of them...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?